Let's wait for the music to start.
Started at the Turnway in Northwest London, bank holiday program. Thursday, first day of Hanukkah, Cafe Kislev, 26th of December. Men are Robert Jürgensen, Rudin Schlitter. The menorah on Titus's arch, Roman art or Jewish reality. This victorious sponsor is Kostel Kurschlem, a Kokoli Solis Tosna Shoma, Kailim, one of the Horshaks, the Lotem, the Sholem, the Hero.
Morning, everyone. It's the Hanukkah. Okay, the Arch of Titus, the Arco de Tito, is certainly.
Someone here with a disabled badge, 24 plate car. Disabled badge car. No one in here.
Okay. Anyway, the Arch of Titus, the Arco de Tito in Rome, is very much a symbol of Gaulus. You see the Kli HaMikdash being taken off into captivity into Rome, and most noticeable amongst them is clearly the menorah. And the question is, and the topic we're going to be exploring today, was this indeed the menorah from the Beis HaMikdash, or was this some kind of conceptual drawing? Was it a piece of art, or was it indeed reflective of the menorah that was looted from the Beis HaMikdash? And it really is a fascinating topic that blends halacha with history. And we need to understand as follows. First thing is that the Torah in Parshas Truma, it's not on your sheets, but the Torah in Parshas Truma is very descriptive in terms of what a menorah needs to be. Vasisa menorah and the Zav Tahar. Menorah Zav Tahar, Mikshatasis HaMenorah, Yirecha V'Konek V'Yer Kafterer, Prochem HaMenorah. We understand a menorah means to be made out of one piece of gold, and it has six branches at the sides, and it has one central shaft, three from each side and a branch in the middle. It has all the different adornments, it has the various different knobs, it has the flowers, Mishakad, Gviyah, Mishakadim, Kanechad, Kafter V'Ferach. And I always say, when I talk about the menorah, if you want to learn something remarkable, it's not our topic for now, thoroughly, thoroughly advisable to learn through the Perush of Rav Shimshon Rafal Hirsch and Parshas Truma on the menorah, where he darshans every kaft of a ferach, and he explains the symbolism of it. I do not know how it's shaykh for a human being to have known or worked out such things, unless it was Kabbalah or Ruach HaKodesh. You can take your pick which one. He understands that the menorah is a visualization of the pasuk of V'nachal Av Ruach Hashem, Rachetzer Gvura Rachdas V'Yos Hashem, and explains how each part of the menorah, how the pasuk is mapped onto the menorah itself. Ayin Shom, for something which is just a tanug to be able to learn through, but you need to go slowly and carefully through Rav Hirsch's Perush and Parshas Truma. But that is, again, not our topic for now, just a marimakom. But the Torah itself tells us that you have to have a menorah with a central shaft, three on each side. But that does not necessarily mean that we know specifically what the menorah looked like. And the question is, would it have looked like the menorah on the Arch of Titus? Was it round? Was it straight? Let's see. What?
In the back of the Chumash.
The back of the Chumash. Yeah, where did they get it from? So we know Shlomo HaMelech in the Beis HaMikdash. He makes all the kelim for the Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo HaMelech actually made numerous menorahs in his Beis HaMikdash. There were actually 10 menorahs in Shlomo HaMelech's Beis HaMikdash. He was allowed to make more menorahs, more shulchanos. There was only one Mizbah Chazav. But you see in the picture at the bottom the numerous menorahs in the Kodesh of Shlomo HaMelech's Beis HaMikdash. So that's the first point. What happened to all of those kelim? So later on in Melachim Beis, Again, I've only don't have all the makoros from your sheets. But later on, Malachim Beis, Nebuchadnezzar Melech Babel comes. Allah Irba God of Tzarim Aleha. He goes out. He besieges the city. Yehoyakim Melech Yehuda goes out, and Melech Babel takes him and says the Navi. He exiles all the people. He destroys the Klei HaMikdash that Shlomo HaMelech had constructed. So, we know that certain things were Nignas, and certain things were destroyed. And presumably, the original menorah of Shlomo HaMelech, if it wasn't put away, it was certainly destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. And therefore, the original menorah, one way or the other, was not present in the second Beis HaMikdash. Because we want to understand which menorah are we talking about on the Arch of Titus. So first things first, you know, there's this famous meme that goes around every so often. It's a picture of Benjamin Netanyahu and the Pope. And Bibi is presenting a menorah to the Pope. And the caption underneath on the meme says, "It's like this, only bigger. If you see it, please let me know." Right? You know, this tradition that we have, whether or not it's accurate is again another share for another time, whether the Klei HaMikdash are in the Vatican. The Vatican vehemently denies it, but whatever. Is the menorah in Rome or not? Don't know. Which menorah, though, was on the Arch of Titus? It can't have been Shlomo HaMelech's one, because Nebuchadnezzar took care of that one way or another. Either it was put away with the Aron and with the Man and with Matamisha, or it got destroyed or taken by Nebuchadnezzar, but it certainly wasn't in the second Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara does tell us, though, when it came to the Chashmonaim, that the Chashmonaim, when they came into the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah is telling us you're not allowed to make a seven-branched candelabrum. That's you're not allowed to replicate things that were in the Beis HaMikdash, famous halacha. You're not even allowed to make a seven-branch menorah out of wood like the Beis like the Chashmonaim did. That in the Chashmonaim, it's really interesting. You know, I don't know what kind of image you have of Hanukkah, the original Hanukkah in your mind, where the Nes Pach Shemen took place. It wasn't a big fancy gold menorah. It's clear from the Gemara it was some basic kind of structure of wood covered of metal covered with wood. It was some kind of basic shepudin shaitz, and you can see here, for example, in this image, you've just got a bunch of wooden sticks with receptacles on the top. But there was nothing fancy about this whatsoever. And the menorah of the Chashmonaim was the shepudin, was just these straight pieces of wood, pieces of metal. In fact, there is someone there at Israel actually reconstructed a menorah out of arrowheads. You know, he's got a theory they made them out of shepudin shel barzel, and they used arrowheads that have a receptacle on the top, and you can light a menorah as a result of that. It's one theory. What were these shepudin? But it's clear from the Gemara that the Chashmonaim were not lighting some fancy gold menorah on that first Hanukkah, and only when there was an economic upturn and we had more money did they make a menorah out of silver. And when there was more money still, the menorah was made out of gold. That means over a period of 200 years, because the Rambam tells us in Hilchas Chanukah that the period of Malchus Beis Chashmonaim lasts for the last 200 years of the time of the Beis HaMikdash. That means originally they had this very basic metal and wood menorah. At some point later on it becomes silver. Some point during those 200 years they fashioned the gold menorah. And by the way, la halacha, you only need to do all the kaftarim and the prachim when you're making it out of gold. If you're making a menorah out of other materials, it doesn't have all the decorations, all the knobs and all the flowers and everything else either. That's why they just literally had these straight shafts, these straight pieces of wood. That would certainly indicate that this menorah on the Arch of Titus, if this is indeed the menorah, it would have been the menorah that was made during the time of Malchus Beis Chashmonai. It would have indeed been used in the Beis HaMikdash, but let's not think for a moment this is Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah. Or let's not think it's one of Shlomo HaMelech's menorahs. Absolutely not. That doesn't come even into the sugya. It would have been the menorah in the Beis, at best, it would have been the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, which was fashioned at some point during Malchus Beis Chashmonai. Okay? Again, that's the Rashi on that Gemara. It says when the Yevonim destroyed the menorah, and the Chashmonaim had to build a new one. Okay? It does say, the Gemara does say in Gittin, number 3 here, we're talking about Titus HaRosh, Vehevi kol hakelim shebemikdash vehenichon ban, Vashim besvina leilech lishtabeach be'iron. The Gemara tells us clearly in Meseches Gittin, you can see the picture down below, that Titus's men carried off the Klei HaMikdash to Rome. Okay, and therefore, if you put all of these together, then it is likely that the menorah that made its way to Rome for the victory parade would have been the menorah of the Chashmonaim. That's point number one. Just by the way, we're going back to the Arch of Titus for a second. Who are the people that are carrying the menorah? Who's carrying the menorah on their backs? Pardon?
Slaves.
The slaves or the Romans? Which ones? There's a machlekes in the room. And you have to prove your point either way.
The Romans
are
wearing short tunics.
Tunics? That's not. As a Jew would also wear. Why would a Jew wear tunics? There's a better diuk than the
hats.
The garlands. The garlands on their heads. Romans wore garlands. Slaves did not wear garlands. So the fact that they are wearing garlands, these are not Jewish slaves being taken off into captivity. These are Romans that are carrying the boots. And again, because they've got the garlands on their heads, that's a symbol of Rome. But therefore, you see the Arch of Titus is certainly corroborating what the Gemara has said. L'hishtabeach b'iro, there was a victory parade. This was a major military operation. It was a major success for Titus HaRasha to sack Yerushalayim, to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore he has a victory parade. The Shaila is this, though. What's with the base of this menorah on the Arch of Titus? What does it look like? What's the base of the menorah? Pardon? It's like the Knesset one. It's like the one, it's not the Knesset, it's the emblem of the State of Israel. And you should know, in the time of 1948, it was a big debate when they were deciding on the official emblem of the State of Israel, should they use the menorah of the Arch of Titus or not. And some of the literature we have, Alachmi of Herzog, discussed this at the time. And part of the problem is the base. Did the base of the menorah and the base of Mikdash look like this? Couple of things. Number one is we know the menorah had to have legs. Okay, the menorah has legs, and therefore you really have the yerech. The Torah talks about it having a yerech, and the Gemara indeed tells us about the height of the menorah. And the Rashi says that there was a flat base with legs coming out of it. What? There were steps to go up for the Kayed, but the menorah was resting on something, it would have fallen over. A menorah has to have a base. So Rashi al Ataira says there was a flat base with legs coming out of it. What? Pardon?
Around the square.
What about the square? What?
Base.
Yeah. What do you mean? Oh, okay, yeah, okay, Al-Khalam. Yes, correct. Rashi says there was a flat base and there were three legs that came out of the base. Das Zakenim learns that way. The Rambam learns that it had three, that the Rambam learns that the menorah had three legs, the Alkit Shimoni implies it had a flat base, and the Rashbam also says that the base of the menorah was flat as well. So within the Rishonim, there is somewhat of a debate exactly what the base looked like, but no one holds that it looked like the thing you see on the bottom of the Arch of Titus, which is these two, I don't know, hexagons or whatever, whatever they look like. But there's a much bigger problem. Much, much bigger problem than this. And if you zoom in, or if you look very carefully, what will you see on the base of the Arch of Titus? Or the menorah of the Arch of Titus? What kind of thing? You can't really see it, unfortunately. But you probably know. What do they have on the, what images were on the base? What? What do they have on the base of the Arch of Titus? There's a picture of a serpent. A mythological Darkoi. And the problem with that is that the Mishnah says that if you find kelim that have a darkoin on it, you have to throw them into the sea because it's a problem of avodah zarah. So hayitachin, what's a darkoin? The Gemara says it's a creature with strands hanging off its face or off its neck. Okay, hayitachin that the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash would have had an image on it, which Chazal said, if you see this image, it must be used for avodah zarah. How could the menorah have had images on it that would be a siman mavuk of avodah zarah? And that is one of the kashas that people ask when you're analysing the Arch of Titus. It seems to be that it can't be halachically compliant, or it can't be halachically valid, because the images on the base clearly could not have been what happened, what would exist in the base of Mikdash. Number one, we have no Rishon who learns that the base looks like the base of the Arch of Titus. And number two, the images on it are antithetical to Yiddishkeit, and Adarab indicate some kind of idolatrous practice. It's got a darkoin on it, and therefore it can't be. Now the question is then, does that then bring everything else into question? Right? Does that mean that even the shape of it is now questionable, because the base is already questionable? So once you're questioning the authenticity of one part of the menorah, you might as well question the authenticity of the whole thing, and maybe it can never look like that at all. Okay? Now, Rashi. So the next thing to discuss is what shape were the branches? Rashi al Atayra says clearly that the branch is extended diagonally from the central branch. Okay? This is Rashi, it's not on the game. Not, I didn't put everything on the sheets, but this is a Rashi. One minute, maybe I did put it on the sheet. Hang on a second, sorry, apologies. I did put it number four. Yes, I did. Yaitzim itzideha. Lekan elekan ba'alachsay nimshachin ba'ayin ha'kenegah goyvish al mizbeach. Rashi is mafurish. Alachsay means it goes up diagonally. So it goes diagonally until the height of the menorah, which means the inner ones obviously would have been shorter or smaller than the outer ones, and that's the picture that you have on the top of page 3, where you see the Kohen Gadol going up, doing Hatavas HaNeiros on a straight menorah. That's how Rashi says it would have looked. Rashi was before the Lubavitchers. Okay, so yes, it's true, right? There's a thing to that. Now, the Rambam, in his Perush HaMishnayos, gives a depiction of the menorah. And if you look in your Shas, if you look in the Vilna Shas, you will see a rounded menorah in this Rambam Perush HaMishnayos in the third parak of Menachos. Okay? However, Rav Kapach goes with the manuscripts of the Rambam, which is the picture that you see at the bottom. Okay? So the printers turned it into this rounded menorah, but the more academic and, dare I say, authentic ones is the Rambam. There's no manuscripts that we have, which is this picture at the bottom that clearly have the drawing of the menorah with straight lines. Okay, the branches are on diagonals. Okay, now the only thing is that the Rambam does write in his Perush over here that his intent in providing a picture was not to describe the structure of the menorah, but rather the configuration of the Gvim, Kafterim, and Prachim. And therefore, those proponents and those people that believe the menorah was round say, yes, it's true the Rambam drew this picture, but it was a schematic drawing. It wasn't meant to show you the shapes of the branches, rather the configuration of the different adornments on the menorah, and therefore you don't have a raya lehedya that the Rambam held. It was straight. It's quite feasible it could be round. However, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam on his parish on Shemois, okay, says that it was straight. Hakanim Anafin number 6, Nimshachin the Gifa Shalmanayr, Tzad Roisha, B'yoysher, K'moyshet Siya Oysa Abamari, Zal. So he says, the menorah was straight exactly as my father depicted. So it's clear the Rambam's son understood that the Rambam, when he drew it straight, was indicating that the lines were straight as well. Again, what would come out therefore from Rashi and the Rambam is that the Arch of Titus is not an authentic drawing of the authentic menorah, because it would have been straight. You should know there is a there are those that disagree. Rav Emanuel Ricky, who was an Achron, who wrote the Sefer Maaseh Choshev, he writes over here in number 7 that the branches of the menorah should be curved, and he says, Rashi says the branches were straight. The Rambam doesn't mention anything about them being straight, and he actually says it's more logical they would have been curved because they represent the curves of the heavens, etc. So there's a nyonim there as well. The Shaila is like this in the time that we have. Is it possible to resolve the discrepancy? And more than that, can archaeological evidence ever impact halachic decisions? And there is a brisa that brings a machlokes about the tzitz, where the Tanakhama held that Kodesh Lashem is written, you've got a picture of the tzitz down below, that Kodesh Lashem was written on 2 lines. Ebenezer ben Rabbi Yossi holds that it was written on 1 line, but look what he says. Ani re'isiv be'ir roimi. I saw the tzitz in roimi. Uksiv Kodesh Lashem b'shita achas. I saw it. Don't tell me with your longness it was on 2 lines. I saw the thing. So I should know. Okay, now, the question is, what do you do with that? And again, the reason why this is significant is because we know that the Klei HaMikdash, two things. Number one, the Arch of Titus was not built by Titus. He was dead already. He only lives a couple of years. The Gemara tells us he dies after the he died after the Churban, with the story with the gnat and the swallow and everything else. Historically, we know he died very soon, and his brother Domitian takes over, and Domitian is the one that builds this Arch of Titus in honor of his brother, but it was built 11 years after the Churban. And more than that, the Klei HaMikdash, even if they're not in Rome now, they were stored in the Temple of Jupiter, and the Temple of Jupiter is only 400 meters away from the Arch of Titus, and therefore it is feasible, Ani Re'isiv Baroimi, that whoever built the Arch of Titus would have seen the menorah, because regardless of how long it stayed there, it was certainly there originally, and again we have halachic evidence that we had Tanoim who saw the Klei HaMikdash in Rome. Okay? So this is it's very powerful, it's very emotional. The question is, how significant is it? So it's interesting that the Rambam in the Hilchos Klei HaMikdash paskins that the tzitz, Kodesh Lashem, is written on 2 lines. But if it was written on 1 line, it's kosher. And sometimes the Tucker was written on 1 line. Kate said, Maaseh HaTzitz. Eisen Tashal Zav, Rachav Shtei Etzbar, so you go to Eisen L'Eisen, you write on 2 lines Kodesh Lashem, Kodesh underneath, Lashem above. If you wrote it on 1 line, it's kosher. Pa'amim kosher b'shitachas. Sometimes it was written on 1 line. And therefore, meaning there were different practices, there wasn't one tzitz, there would have been a number of tzitzis, tzitziyai, it's the same lashon by the tzitz and tzitz, the same thing, right? It's something you stare at. Yeah, yeah. But they would have made different ones at different times. The one he saw in Rome, punkt, was written b'shita achas, and it was one that you ate to be the evidence according to the Rambam, but there would have been different ones knocking about. The Rabbi Yosef Karo, the Mechaber, learns in the Kesef Mishnah, he says pshat in the Rambam is like this. The Rambam felt that the Chachamim were correct. Novos, you can't ignore the evidence. Rabbi Lezmer Rabbi Yosef says, I saw it. So how does the Rambam square this? I hold that the Chacham are correct, but Rabbi Lezben saw it, and therefore the Rambam resolves the discrepancy between the two by saying, Enechanami, it's meant to be written on 2 lines, but if you wrote it on 1 line, it's kosher, and that's the one that he saw. Okay? And the Meiri says that the Chacham felt that Allah should be on 2 lines, despite the fact the evidence is otherwise. The Shaila is therefore, how do you deal with this discrepancy? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, whoever mentioned Lubavitcher Rebbe, was adamant and militant that the menorah on the Arch of Titus is not a halachic menorah. The Rambam, Rashi, there's a Darkoin, and therefore it does not depict the actual menorah at all. Rather, there were copies of the menorah that were knocking around Yerushalayim. And they were actually even made by David Zohar, because a Jew would never be allowed to make a copy of the menorah, but the Goyim made copies of the menorah, and that's the one that the Romans carted off to Rome. They never took the real menorah back to Rome. They took a fake one, they took a copy, and what do they care if it's this menorah, that menorah? It's different to them, does it? And that's what they were parading in the Arch of Titus. And the Rebbe was insistent that when you draw the menorah, it has to be straight, and therefore the Minigin Chabad, it's not particularly old Minigin Chabad, by the way, is that all the menorahs at home are also straight as well. But that is a relatively new Lubavitcher Minig. Well, in the 70s or 80s, it became a thing in Chabad. But it was not, if I remember correctly, it was not the original Minig Chabad. But okay, there's no reason why not to kosher menorah, whether it's straight or whether it's round. Okay, I'm saying a home menorah. Now, it's possible, we know the Medrash says, Yosef Meshisa, that Jews would go, they sent Yidden in to get the Caleb, and it's also possible, it says he brought out a menorah, maybe he brought out a lamp, maybe he didn't bring out the real menorah for the Romans as well. You could learn the Medrash that way. Rav Herzog, Zechen Nevracha, who was chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, he was more bothered by the darkon on the base, actually. And therefore he proposes that, big chiddush, that when the menorah, this taket is the menorah. Taka is the menorah and the menorah is round. By the way, all the archaeological evidence of whatever depictions we have in caves and graves and wherever else of menorahs from that time with seven branch candelabra are all round, by the way. Anything we have from the time of Baal Sheni in the caves of Ma'aras and Eretz are also round menorahs. And Rav Herzog felt that the menorah was round. What's with the base? So he claims that when the menorah is being transported to Rome, the base broke off. But they needed a base to parade the menorah with, and therefore they made their own. And therefore he was writing in terms of the emblem of the State of Israel, that they should use a different base, because it's inappropriate to use something which the Gemara says is clearly for Avodah Zarah. But according to this, it's possible that the menorah would have been round, but as mentioned, the Lubavitcher Rebbe held that it was straight, based on Rashi, based on the Rambam, and therefore according to him, the menorah on the Arch of Titus is not, and was not a depiction of the authentic menorah, but as mentioned, Rav Herzog and other branches of archaeological evidence would propose this in theory could be true. Either way, Mitz Hashem, we should be zeicha, our chadash at Tzion Tar, we should be zeicha to see the Kehanim, the Kayan light the menorah again, at the Kor of Mamash Mimhera, B'Yameinu, Amen.
London, Thursday, Hanukkah, Coffee, Kislev, 25th of December, Rena Rabbi, Yitzhak Shoshet, Shlita, 8 days, 8 explanations. The underlying dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel.
Prelude to Hanukkah. The Gemara Shabbos, we all know, we're all familiar with. The basic mitzvah is Neri Shabesai. Every person lights one specific candle for the whole household. The Mahadrin is, or every household member actually lights a candle. And then the Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, that's already a Machlekes. Shammai says you light 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And Beis Hillel says you light 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, etc. And within that, there is a Machlekes as to the rationale between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The reason why you light in descending order is because today is 8 days, now it's only 7 days, now it's 6 days, etc. And the other says, it's not 1 day has gone out, not 2 days have gone out, and so on and so forth. And the second opinion says, as we well know, that according to Beis Shammai, it's keneged pareh hachag. It has to do with the same order in which the karbonos were brought on Sukkos. Begging, of course, the question, what's the connection between the two? And according to Beis Hillel, it's Maila Makedesh Vemaridin. We're always looking to increase in Kedusha. There are 316 arguments, machlekes, between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in Shas. And the Zohar in Raya Mehemna actually observes that Beis Shammai is rooted in Midas Hadin, rooted in Midas Hagvura. Hence, he always takes a generally stricter approach to all of his halacha, whilst Beis Hillel is rooted in Midas Hachesed, Midas Harachamim. And that's why he's generally always much more meichel. He takes a softer approach and a softer view. And we all know, again, the story, and it's encapsulated really in that story that the Gemara brings in, also in Shabbos, about the would-be ger who comes over to Shammai and tells him, teach me al v'tayra al regal achas, and Shammai chases him away with a builder's measuring tool. Whereas when it comes to Hillel, Hillel patiently explains to him the loch sani l'chaber chol esavid, he takes a softer approach to him again. Thus says the Gemara in Erev in Daf Yud Gimel, why did Beis Hillel, why were they zoche, that the halachas should always be like them? Because they were midas harachmin, they were kind, they were gracious. They would in fact always cite both opinions, not just their own, but they would always cite Beis Shammai's opinion as well. Not only that, but they would cite Beis Shammai's opinion first before they would cite their own opinion. With that in mind, some and various different mafarshim choose to explain that the very machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel in regard to Neres Hanukkah is not just some localized machlokes about what constitutes Mahadrin Mina Mahadrin, but in actual fact it reflects two global perspectives on Yiddishkeit and the impact and the effect of the Nes Hanukkah, etc., etc., in the following way. Number one, Beis Shammai tends to focus and specifically highlight the strength of the Nes Hanukkah in the context of the defeat of the Yavanim, of the Greeks. That, of course, occurred on the first day of Hanukkah, but the impact diminishes over time, because ultimately, whatever happened at that point in time, Klal Yisrael fell prey once again to their enemies. 234 years later, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. So the mitzvah is very deliberately performed in descending order to highlight the diminishing effect of that particular ness, focusing uniquely on the ness of the Nitzachon that, although at the moment in time was great, over the course of time, I mean it was great because he had a band of Maccabees against a huge army, but over the course of time, there was a diminishing effect. Ultimately, they still lost. Ultimately, the Beis HaMikdash, Rahman al-Islam, was destroyed, and we ended up in Golis. And therefore, the candles lit in that descending order reflect that reality. Beis Hillel, on the other hand, wants to focus on the Kedusha that resulted from the actual Ness of Hanukkah. Sure, there was the Ness, the victory, but then what resulted subsequent to that? As a general rule, Milam HaKadosh, we look to strive and increase in holiness, and that was the reality of the then Beis HaMikdash experience. Imagine, if you will, that overwhelming feeling of defeat or despair, even as you won over the enemy, now that you walk into the Beis HaMikdash, you find it so utterly defiled. How devastating that feeling would have been in that moment in time. And then the fervor and the excitement with the Chanukah, the literal rededication, which increases day by day, every single day. They're cleaning up more, every single day. They're dedicating more, every single day. The Beis HaMikdash is being restored to its former glory. So there is this increasing sense of joy, of fulfillment, of Kedusha, of jubilation associated with that. And hence you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, etc. Just as the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash becomes increasingly restored over the course of the days of Hanukkah because of its rededication, so too the lights reflect also that general increase in Kedusha in relation to all of us. Number two, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had two different approaches to the reality of our goals. Beis Shammai, again, in keeping with his Midas Hadin, focuses on the shortcomings of every single one of us, of every single individual in Golis, and views Ruchnius, spirituality in Golis, as having a diminishing return. In other words, he views a one-dimensional reality where every successive generation becomes weaker in its relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's an undisputed fact that the further away we are from Har Sinai, where we all stood and we all saw and we all heard HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, we pale in spiritual significance to previous generations. Some actually bring this up in context of Nochem Ish Gamzu and Rabbi Akiva. They both had a similar catchphrase. Nochem Ish Gamzu came from an earlier generation, and whenever he encountered seeming adversity in his or in his surrounds, he would say, Gamzu L'Toyva. He would literally be able to finger point. He would be able to perceive it quite literally and always expressed it in Lashon HaKodesh. Rabbi Akiva is a generation later, and he expresses himself in more general terms. Kol D'Avad Rachmona L'Tavava. Doesn't see it necessarily in the same level. The manifestation isn't as apparent and obvious to him. He knows it's there, he perceives it, but he expresses it in more general terms, called the Avar Rahmana. And he expresses it, interestingly, not in Lashon HaKodesh, but in Aramaic. Again, it reflects a certain reality of the further away we are, the more we are in Golos, the further or the more detached we might otherwise become. And that's reflected, therefore, as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, in the candles of the menorah. Again, 87654. Beis Hillel, however, in keeping with his Rachamim, looks at the bigger picture. There is another dimension to our reality. Granted, we may be less than before, but he's focusing on the positive aspects of every single individual and views Golos as a testament to the way that we are able to continue to endure as Klal Yisrael. The hard fact is that we've undergone pogroms, we've undergone an Inquisition, we've undergone a Holocaust, we've undergone an October 7th, and yet we're still lighting up. In fact, we're lighting up menorahs even in the very places where that persecution took place. We're still identifying. So whilst Beis Shammai looks at the cold facts, Beis Hillel considers how one thing that we do in distress is worth 1,000 at ease. A mitzvah in our generation, after everything endured, counts so much more than that same mitzvah being performed, say, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash. And as every successive generation, regardless of how further we are from Har Sinai, continues to do mitzvahs, then a greater recognition of the endurance of Klal Yisrael is realized. And that's symbolized, therefore, in the increase of lights, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, as Beis Hillel. Number 3, a flip side approach. Since Beis Shammai is focused on, again, Midas Adin, strict judgment, after all, they're all about din, meaning that they are more conscientious about din, about judgment, and they are, as we said, conscientious of the reality of our diminished generation, which would technically mean that we are, chas v'sholem, more deserving of discipline and judgment. There's a price to pay. But Beis Shammai is equally committed to, at the very least, diminishing that judgment in whichever way. So lighting in descending order represents the idea of the removal or the diminishment of those potential dinim, of those potential judgments, however deserving they might otherwise kashrusholim be. So in this sense, the idea of 87654, etc., it's not reflecting a certain negative reality of increasingly diminished spiritual stature. Precisely because of that negative reality as it exists, and as they see it, our diminished spiritual selves, they are concerned about the potential judgment, and therefore the lights are kindled in diminishing order to represent the idea of endeavoring to diminish the din for us as much as possible. So that right away suggests a softer approach to Beis Shammai. But even as it does, Beis Hillel goes one critical step further. They're focused on chesed, so they go the extra mile. They don't ignore, they cannot ignore, the reality of our diminished spiritual status. But their approach is not just, as Beis Shammai, to accept whatever judgment, albeit trying to diminish it. No, they want to be mamtik dinim, they want to actually sweeten any whatever bad judgments or whatever negative decrees. To a point where, as in the words of the Gemara and Yuma, zdoinois nasalei kezachiois, the sins themselves become transformed into mitzvahs. How does that work? How does an avera become a mitzvah? You did wrong, you did teshuvah, you hopefully wipe the slate clean. But how does the sin actually become a mitzvah? So Chazal tell us of the concept. Ha'emer echta ba'ashuv. If somebody says, I'm going to do an aveira and I'm going to do tshuva, ema speaking b'yodilasas tshuva. What does that mean? It doesn't say he cannot do teshuvah. Everybody can do teshuvah, regardless. Even if someone was Eved Avodah Zarah, he can do teshuvah. What it means is, a maspikim biyada, he won't have the added support, mil milo. We have a principle, habola tayr masai noise. Somebody comes to purify themselves, they'll always have the siyata deshmaya to help them along the way. Sometimes you obviously need that added impetus, that extra help from above, if you will. But if somebody says, echta bi'oshiv, I'm going to sin and I'm going to do teshuvah, he doesn't get that help. Why not? So you'll say, because of chutzpah. I mean, he's going to do the Avera with such awareness and such conscientiousness and such arrogance. I mean, he doesn't deserve to have that added help. But it's actually a lot more than that as well. Echta vi'oshev. The tshuva itself is being used to actually perform the Avera. I will sin and I will do teshuva. He's using the backup of teshuva itself and relying on that as the basis for his present act of sin. I know I'm doing wrong, but it's okay. I have teshuva to back me up afterwards. That's abusing the very gift of teshuva, and thus a maspikin biyada. In a very similar vein, a person does an avera. There's teshuva tato, a lowlier level of teshuva. Oy, Rabbeinu Shlalom, I did so wrong, please forgive me. And then there's teshuva ilah, which reaches into the inner core of oneself, where he reflects and understands and appreciates how distant he or she has actually become from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on account of the Avera. And much like, if you will, a rubber band, an elastic band, as you call it, when you pull back from where you were, and now you want to propel forward, you end up going even further than where you were before, at that initial point, prior to the Avera. How did you get there? The very sin, the Avera itself, the Zdoinis, resulted in that transformation. The Zdoinis themselves, now when you think about and reflect upon and appreciate how distant you have become and how much closer you want to become again, help that process. And therefore, they become literally like Zochias. They become like Meris. They become like Mitzvahs themselves. They enabled you in their own unique way to become greater than when you were even prior than before. So according to Beis Hillel, yes, we are in Golos. And yes, maybe we are less spiritually inclined, no less like Beis Shammai says. But unlike Beis Shammai, who accepts the reality for what it is, and then there's a consequence of Gevura, of Din, as a result, you light the candles, as far as Beis Shammai is concerned, in diminishing order to reflect the hopefully sweetening of the judgment in whichever sort of way. Beis Hillel says, why stop there? It's more than just decreasing the impact of the negative. But in fact, the turning the negative itself into positives. Zdoinois nasalei kezochias. Yes, Rachmana l'tzlan, we are still in Golos. But there's a unique opportunity, even in the darkness. And that's accomplished by elevating oneself every single day. Lighting in ascending order symbolizes the daily elevation, which can turn that judgment, that din, even the diminished judgment of Beis Shammai into actual positives such that there's no judgment altogether. Then there's number four, leaving aside the various layers of explanation and the context of the one who's doing the lighting. There's the actual inspiration of the day itself. Hanukkah is all about Prasume Nisa. Of course, that's given a halachic fact with all the implications, and that's why people, dafka, when you light, when people are awake, that's why we even light in shul with a brocha, etc., etc. The machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel relates to the inspiration and the joy that one experiences from an event as time goes on. You know, there are two types of impact. For some, the inspiration can have a diminishing effect. Today, you are on a high, but the inspiration wears off over time. Think about where you were on Yom Kippur and where you might, in fact, be, say, a month later. That's the basis for Beis Shammai's opinion. As time progresses, the impact wanes. That's reality. Beis Shammai focuses on that reality, and therefore, again, 87654. For others, moments of inspiration are opportunity for growth. You can capitalize on it. You need the initial event to trigger the high. And once kickstarted, you can build on that. Yom Kippur doesn't have to wear off. So, whilst Beis Shammai focuses maybe on what might be common fact, Beis Hillel focuses on what is potential. Inasmuch as it is fact that inspiration in and of itself might wane over time, you have the potential to use inspiring moments as a stepping stone for further growth, if you choose not to allow that inspiration to dwindle. And that's the basis, therefore, of Beis Hillel, of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Number 5. In a very similar vein, the Shammai is of the opinion that the Chanukah lights, like we said at the outset, is the commemoration particularly of the defeat over the enemy and the victory that we experience. And again, as each generation passes, it becomes more difficult to relate to that. Sure, at that moment in time, Shana, the following year, Chazal, everybody celebrated, everybody remembered what happened. 2 years later, 5 years later, 10 years later, here we are almost many years later, the joy that was experienced at that initial point of time of the actual Ness. When you think about it, yes, we talk about it, we daven about it, but we don't by no means relate to it in the same way anymore. And therefore the Chanukah lights are lit in descending order to commemorate the reality of a diminishing joy that was experienced then vis-a-vis today. Beis Hillel is of the opinion that, like we said, the Chanukah lights also commemorate the rededication of the Beis HaMikdash. A rededication implies that the old is renewed. And it's not just renewed as a one-off experience, it's renewed continually. We have the same principle of Torah. It's referred to often in the present tense, even years later, in Chumash itself, in the Torah itself. Because b'chol yom b'yom yiyu b'necha v'chadoshim. Torah isn't just a one-off event that happened 3,332 years ago. It's something that we're supposed to experience in our own unique way, Matan Torah, on a daily basis. So the word Hanukkah also, rededication, renewal is a major theme of Hanukkah. And every day a candle is lit to reflect this great rededication and add a new quality of Kedusha to that day. Number 6, you have the Guf and you have the Neshama. And they are opposite properties regarding maturity. The body ages over time. The body gradually deteriorates. On the other hand, the Neshama starts off with a clean slate. There's no chusim, there's no nothing. And it matures over time. What does the Mishnah say in Pirkei Avos? A korchah chatachai val korchah chatameis. A person is born against their will and a person dies against their will, which frankly is a contradiction in terms. Because if you're born against your will, it means you don't want to be here, so why are you dying against your will? And if you're dying against your will, it means you want to be here, so why are you being forced to be born against your will? And the point is that the Neshama first, when it's upstairs by Kisei HaKavod and it looks into this world and the gullus and the corruption and everything else besides, it doesn't want to come into this world. For what? All the challenges it's going to encounter. Therefore, al-korcha tachai is forced to come into the world against its will. Once here in the body, and it realizes that only and precisely through the body it can engage with the world and do mitzvahs so, such that it can elevate itself to a point even higher than where it was prior to its initial descent, it doesn't want to leave, it wants to continue doing. Hence, al-korcha tachai. So the neshama starts off with a clean slate in the first instance here. Beis Shammai, again, is of the opinion that the Chanukah lights are all about the candles, the body. We light the Chanukah lights to commemorate the physical victory over the enemy, again, that they wanted to physically destroy us. And just as there is a physical victory, we reflect on our physical reality, the human body, and the human body, as we say, ages and dwindles over time. So we light the candles in a dwindling manner. And we light the candles, therefore, in a descending order which serves to remind us, hey, your body is fading. So don't pursue physical or worldly pleasures. In the words of the Gemara in Erevin, Chatei v'achol, Chatei v'shei, hurry up, get all the gashmias, get all the materialism, the food, the drink, whatever, out of the way, because it's the ruchnias, the spirituality that matters, and that's what's going to remain with you. That's what Beis Shammai is focused on. Beis Hillel is of the opinion that the Chanukah lights is all about the fire on top of the candles, which represents our neshama. And the neshama starts off in a clean slate, and then builds from there. Let's not forget that the Greeks did not seek in the first instance to annihilate us. They wanted to embrace us, to embrace Hellenism. They had no problem of us embracing Torah and mitzvahs, etc., but entirely from a cultural perspective. Those things that were supra-rational principles, Shabbos, kosher, bris milah, etc., those are the things that they wanted to abolish. They were threatening the neshama far more so than the actual body. And in that sense, even as, of course, it was a physical victory, it was every bit and even more so a spiritual victory. And therefore, as much as the neshama never dwindles, but rather always matures over the course of time with each and every successive mitzvah, the Chanukah lights to reflect this are also lit in ascending order. And finally, number 7, I know we said 8, but we'll come to that in a second. The machlokes between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel relates to how we can influence the rest of the world. The world is filled with all kinds of people and all kinds of nations with all different kinds of views. Some of those differences complement each other and bring good to the world. And some of those differences cause dispute and evil and absolute destruction. And as Klal Yisrael, we are tasked with being an Erla Gaim. We are there to assert a greater influence on the world, whereby we ensure, we strive to make all out of the many differences of the many people of the world to become limited to natural differences, such that they can nurture one another, and as a result, the people of the world ultimately become united. Beis Shammai is of the opinion that the Nes of Hanukkah was a step towards that unification of the world, and therefore the Hanukkah lights are lit in a way to symbolize that unity. And that's why that second opinion in the Gemara says, Kineged Parei HaChag, the 70 cows that were brought, the oxen that were brought, were compared to reflect the 70 nations. And they're then brought in descending order to make out of those 70 nations one. Here too, Beis Shammai, we start with 8, many, disparity. And then we descend from 8 down into one part, unity. Beis Hillel cannot and does not disagree with that fact, that unifying the world is our primary objective. But that's the factual end result. We're not there yet. That will come with Mashiach. Then on that day, everybody will come to acknowledge that reality. Meanwhile, we have to work on getting there. And how do we get there? By bringing increasing light into the world. And we don't rest on our laurels. That light has to be increased continuously. We do a mitzvah today, and we do a mitzvah again tomorrow, and then a second mitzvah, and then we do a second mitzvah and a third mitzvah, and so we light in increasing order, and that's why the Hanukkah lights are lit in ascending order according to Beis Hillel. Number 8 takes us somewhere else altogether. It's not so much a machlokes per se, but it's Al Pi Drush, and it connects Hanukkah with last week's Parsha. This is a vart, a beautiful vart from the Basayin, who was a Talmud of the Maggid. We know the story in last week's Parsha. There is Vayihikim Shlesh Chadashim. It was approximately 3 months after the saga of Yehuda with the sons, etc. Vayuga the Yehuda Lamar. And it was told to Yehuda Lamar, Zonsa Tamar Kalasecha. Tamar, your daughter-in-law, was unfaithful. What does Yehuda say? Haitziua v'sisareif. She should be taken to be burnt. And then what does she say? Lemi Yasha'el, to he whom these belong, Achesemes, Rav Silva Mata. She refers to his signet ring, and she refers to his cloak, and she refers to his stick, etc. That's the one who's responsible. And what does Yehuda answer? Sot kami meni. She's right. Ki alkein l'esati el l'sheila b'ni, because I didn't give her over to Sheila, my son. Listen to this. There's a famous B'nai Yisoskar that tells us, it's probably others as well, that in as much as we have Rosh Hashanah, and we have Yom Kippur, and we have Hoshana Rabbah, we also have Zayis Chanukah. B'zayis yichaper ara. So we have Zayis Chanukah as a last opportunity to do teshuva, a real opportunity. Yehuda is a euphemism for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yudke Bavke, with the Dalit in between. Tamar is a euphemism for Klal Yisrael, Goyel L'Asura Domsel L'Tamar, Tzadik HaTamar Yifroch. And we are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Kala, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Matan Torah was the Chosen, we're the Kala. Zayis Chanukah is approximately 3 months after Hashanah Rabbah, just a little bit later. Vayihi Kimish Shlesh Chadashim was approximately 3 months later. Approximately 3 months after Hashanah Rabbah, which is Zayis Chanukah, Vayugad Yehuda Lamar the Yetzahara comes over to Yehuda to the Rabbeinu Shleilam and he says, Zonsa Tamar Kalasecha, Tamar Yerkala, Klal Yisrael, are remaining eminently unfaithful here in this gulz. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu reflects on that reality. If that's the reality, then let her be taken. Let her continue to be consumed by the flames of our Golas, of our exile state. But then Tamar turns around. Halach is like Beis Hillel. Tamar turns around. And she says to Yehuda, Lemia Sha'el, to he whom these belong. Look, the psil in that case means a cloak, but psil actually refers to wicks. Chesemes means his signet ring, and the chesemes refers to the seal of the oil of the Kohen Gadol. And mata is a stick. Shvatim, the Shiftei Yisrael, are also referred to as mata, matos. Why? Because of the strength and the steadfastness. So Tamar turns around to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, really? I'm undeserving. Look at me. Here we are all these years later. We might be in Golos, but look at the Chesemes. We're still taking that oil, commemorating that oil of the Chesemes, of that original oil. And we're still taking the psil, and we're still taking those wicks, and we're still lighting up, and we're still permeating this darkness. And we're maintaining the matzah, we're maintaining the steadfastness. We're still standing strong in every respect of our Yiddishkeit. Sure, there might be those who, for one reason or another, are walking in darkness. That's no fault of theirs. But nevertheless, and even those who might be are still participating in lighting up. Vayomer Yehuda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu acknowledges that reality, and he says, Tzotko mimeni. We're right. Ki al kein la nisatiya l'sheila b'ni, because they didn't give her over to Sheila. Sheila is the same oisies as Sheila. Sheila is the name of Mashiach, because I didn't hand them over to Mashiach. I caused them to continue to languish in this actual golos. It's not our fault. The halacha is like Beis Hillel. As long as we keep lighting and burning up the lights, we keep increasing the light, that's how we light up our lives, that's the way we light up our world, that's the way we will certainly be zeichas in the days of Hanukkah to be able to light the ultimate menorah once again. Vayomer Rahim bizman hazeh with the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, here to be Yameinu Amen.
Ronnie, this is...